everyone. Welcome back. It's episode 46 of Josh Nason's Punch Out. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, podcaster, Olympic bronze medalist for WrestlingObserver.com. Thanks for coming back. This is the, eighth night time I've tried to record this intro. So hopefully this one goes better than the other ones. Olympics going on, full swing, interesting stories on and off the courts, the fields, the pools. Olympics are a fun time, all kinds of weird sports. You don't get a chance to see that much in between. And it's kind of just a smorgasbord of everything. You know, you have everything from handball to track and field to all the events in track and field to swimming to your basketballs to volleyball and all these interesting stuff. Equestrian was on today, and there's different things within that, and there's all kinds of crazy stuff. So if you're a big Olympics head, I know there's a lot of people out there. Hopefully you've been enjoying it, coming to an end this weekend, very sadly, and then we'll be back in another 4 years for the next Summer Games. However, we're going to talk about the games that happen all year, and that is the world of MMA, specifically UFC 202 and the Olympic gold medalists and shit-talking, that being Conor McGregor and another gold medalist in shit-talking in Nate Diaz. They rematch on Saturday night in Las Vegas, Nevada, UFC 202. As we record this late on Wednesday night, East Coast time, we are hours removed from a very interesting press conference, one that was marred, depending on who you're talking to, by a bottle and can-throwing incident after really near towards the latter half of the conference. My guess, if you're listening to this, you've probably already seen this. It was a sight to behold, and something you can actually see on the site, on our site right now, if you want to catch the video. It's well worth watching if you haven't seen it. Who knows if it's actually going to help the buy rate or help the interest level and all that. But I'm getting ahead of myself because that's what we talked about with our special guest tonight. He is from MMAPayout.com, a site that's been around for a long time, talking about the business of the sport. It is Jason Cruz. Jason joined me for almost about an hour. We talked all about today's crazy stuff. We talked about UFC 202 in general, some of the top fights on that, other general feelings about the card. Where does McGregor and Diaz go here with a victory or a loss? And even a little bit of WWE as well. So interesting conversation. Obviously, also Jason is a lawyer, so we talked a little bit about all this union talk and the new players in the game, how it's going to affect stuff, the lawsuit, all that crazy stuff that happens out of the cage. So if you're into everything like that, you're going to enjoy this conversation. If not, stick around anyway because you're going to enjoy it too. So without further ado, let's get to Jason Cruz of MMAPayout.com. Well, a very big week in the world of mixed martial arts. And we're happy to be joined by, we're going to go to the Pacific Northwest. Happy to be joined by Jason Cruz of MMAPayout.com, a site that you have definitely heard of before if you've been on the interwebs and following the game of mixed martial arts for any span of time, especially the business side of things. And, you know, Jason, we always try to start out with the really tough questions to really set the tone, you know, for these interviews and stuff. So
I'm ready.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. Have you ever had a water bottle thrown at your head?
You know, not intentionally, but I have had a couple whiz by my head. Yes, I do attend college and NFL football games, and sometimes those things get a little feisty. But fortunately, I've never provoked anyone. Although I have given the double birds to people, but I've never provoked anyone to the extent where they will throw water bottles at me.
Interesting. Okay, well, we'll get a little bit more to UFC 202 today and all the crazy things that happen at this press conference. Really just kind of a small segment of time that crazy things happen. We'll talk about that in a minute, but I want to give people a little bit of background about you and kind of how you where you're at and how you started writing for Payout. And before you and I were talking off air, as the pros like to say, you are not that far away from this site's Brian Alvarez, and you confirm that there's no statues, unfortunately, no gold boats of, you know, commemorating Brian around the greater Pacific Northwest, and you're very close to Bothell, but you're up in Seahawks country and Mariners country up there in Seattle, Washington.
Yes, I do have a 12 flag hanging in my office, and you know, I could deliver one to you over there in Patriotsville if you'd like one. And as we speak, I am actually watching the Mariners as they actually are losing right now to the Angels.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, we were talking on Twitter about the Red Sox and Mariners, their chances for the wild card and such. Go ahead.
And they just flashed on the screen. The Mariners are 3 games behind the Red Sox right now in the wild card standings.
Got it. So it's going to be a race to the finish. Let's try to keep it civil on social media. The people don't like to see us fight and all that kind of stuff. How did you, and on your Twitter profile, you know, writer, lawyer, blogger, a lot of, you know, background there in that statement. How did you first start writing about the crazy world of mixed martial arts?
So it's pretty funny because 2002 actually was probably when I first started following martial arts. I've been practicing law since 1999, so I'm pretty old. But I always had a passion to write, so it's kind of been a side project I've been always doing in addition to lawyering, I guess. And so I did freelance work for a small community paper called Northwest Asian Weekly. And what was funny is before writing for Payout, I was pitched by a PR person by the name of Dave Schaller with a WEC, asking if I could write a profile on a Federal Way MMA fighter up and coming, and his name was Benson Henderson.
Interesting.
Yes. So it was great. It was a great way to get into the sport of MMA. And I, you know, I interviewed Ben, and he was great. It was fun because you see him now, and you saw him before he made it. This is when he was in the WEC. Before one of the Cerrone fights but you could tell he was happy. Not that he's not happy now, but he was happy. He was energetic. He was way into you know, the sport of MMA, and he was really just full of youthful energy, and that was great. And then from there, I actually did an interview with Mark Munoz, and he was great as well. He treated me like I was Ariel Helwani. I mean, he didn't know who I was, but he gave me the time, and he was really great. And that actually was when I got through some other contacts, not through a Schaller, but there was an opening on Payout around 2010. I applied, sent him a couple clips, including the Henderson clip, and the rest is history. I began actually this month makes it 6 years on the Payout.
No kidding. Yep. So primarily focus on. Do you focus on general news or more the business side of things? Obviously, Payout is very business focused. But what do you consider your bread and butter for expertise?
Yeah, I think it's the Payout has always been the go-to, just MMA business and things of that nature. I've written a lot of, I try to focus on sports because that's kind of what I am interested in. I think my claim to fame, I have a couple claim to fame. I interviewed or attempted to interview Jeremy Lin. He turned me down. It was the nicest NBA player to ever turn me down. It was great. I did interview Jordan Clarkson before, just various other sports figures. The best guy I've ever interviewed was Mr. Sulu, and the name escapes me.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And anyway, it was great. So a lot of just features, but more generated towards sports. Not a lot of hard news that I write about.
And I think the name was like George Takei. Is that
George Takei? Gotcha. You know, whenever I try to tell people that, I always fall back to Mr. Sulu, and he was great as well. The funny story about that one is I had 10 minutes. I mean, I'm sure you've had to interview people and they give you 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And he overran with the guy before me. And so it got down to like I had 3 minutes. And so he sat down and he gave me like his A game spiel. And the thing is, you know, as you want to get your stuff in, but at the same time, you don't want to interrupt them. And then it's one of those things where you see over the shoulder, the guy's like ready to pull them, you know, and they have to do it in a nice way. And they give you the old, you know, we'll find some time afterward, you know, that kind of thing. Never happened. Yeah. But anyway, he was great. He for the 3 minutes that I got to interview him, he was great.
That's good to hear. Good to hear. Now, so the given that there is, you know, so much business stuff going on and so much on the legal side of things, have you found that your degree has helped you understand things in a way that maybe the average MMA writer does not understand them just because of that background?
Yes and no. I think, yes, from the perspective of, you know, what the filings are all about and what the attorneys are trying to do. I think from a general sense, when lawsuits are filed and things of that nature are done, you understand what's going on, the posturing that goes on, the things that lawyers say. You've been there, and then it's almost as if everything comes to the forefront of how things go, you know, and you almost like it's the whole cold sweat thing. It's like, oh my gosh, geez, I'm glad that didn't happen to me, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then know from the perspective of a lot of these things, especially the antitrust suit, is really one of those complex areas of law where you almost have to dig down and be almost a student once again, where you're reading the cases and you're thinking about, you know, what is anti-competitive and what the Sherman Act is talking about and what that's all about and how does that apply to the facts of the case. And those things are things you learn in law school, and you have to kind of law school and the practice of law are vastly different if you ever talk to a lawyer. And you do have to fall back on those types of things. Now, from the perspective of, you know, reading the cases and lawsuits that are filed, you kind of are the voyeur because you like hearing these, you know, hotly contested issues and these, you know, big arguments being made and all the letter writing that goes on in these passive aggressive tones. And those things are interesting. But again, when it's you that's on the other end, when you're writing these letters and you have, or you receive letters like that, you tend to tense up a little more than just reading what these attorneys have to say.
Interesting. What type of law do you specialize in?
So I own my own practice. It's Cruz Law PLLC. And I do business, generally business and real estate law. And I do focus, I'm starting to get a little more cases in trademark and copyright law, which is great because that's an interesting area of law. But really, it's just myself. So it's really just a lot of business transactional work, a couple litigation cases going on. But I used to work in bigger firms, and those were great for the infrastructure. But I do like the fact that I could watch the UFC Fight Pass or WWE Network while turning out work at home. So that's kind of a plus.
Yeah. Good to know. So just to clarify, you are not an expert in bird law. Is that correct?
I can be an expert if I am retained by someone. That's the other thing. The asterisk is if you pay me, I will learn the law.
Got you.
So to speak. Yeah, I'm kind of kidding, but not really.
Good to know. So if any bird law cases come up, I will be sure to call you. Obviously, for those that watch It's Always Sunny, you probably know what I'm talking about. Anyway, let's move on to UFC 202. Now we have that background settled, and we kind of have our foundation. This pay-per-view, it was really interesting that leading up to this, they're really, you know, I didn't feel a buzz about this show. And I don't know whether it's because there's still that UFC 200 hangover effect and everything that went into that week. I don't know if it's just because there's just all these events that have happened since then or what it is. But for some reason, I just wasn't feeling it. And I heard this from other people, you know, online, that there wasn't just really a buzz, quote unquote buzz, for the show coming up on Sunday. For whatever reason, the hype just really didn't feel it. And then this press conference happens today, about 25 minutes or so, 28 minutes, give or take. and kind of innocuous. You know, Conor McGregor didn't exactly show up to start at the beginning of the press conference. Got there late, blamed it on Vegas traffic. They started the press conference anyway. And all of a sudden, you know, things kind of just doing their thing. And normal press conference. And then all of a sudden, Nate Diaz walks away. He walks around the back of the stage and walks around in the crowd. And then McGregor gets up. They start just, you know, yelling at each other in this very surreal scene. And then all of a sudden, you know, just like Russell Wilson or Tom Brady, anything like this, they start slinging bottles and cans back and forth. And a very agitated Dana White just yelling at Connor as if he's a child. I thought that was kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And also it was like press conference over. And sorry, everyone. And, you know, 27 minutes or so later, it was over. What I happened to see this after the fact. I was in a meeting for my my full-time job and got out, and all of a sudden I saw everyone talking about this on my Twitter timeline. I'm like, what the hell did I miss? And I look, and I was like, oh my god, this is something. What did you think when you saw this going on today?
It was unreal, and a little bit of the. I think it was funny because there was a little bit of foreshadowing, because one of the earlier questions, Dana was attempting to take the top off of one of the bottles, and like he fumbled it. But so anyway, I noticed the bottle, and you know, a little foreshadowing later, they started heaving bottles. But I think there was a couple glass ones there, so that was the one concern with all of that throwing.
I see.
So that was a little concern there. And then just to step back a little bit, the Conor McGregor line when he came in, it's like, it must be a McGregor fight because there's so much traffic going on out in Vegas. You know, that was a pretty good comeback to excuse himself. But going back to the bottle throwing, it's really a great way to promote the fight, but in the same respect, there was a safety issue because they're heaving these things. It looked like it was heaving things over the media pit or media row.
Yeah.
And, you know, it looks like Larry Pugmire tweeted that Conor McGregor's girlfriend got hit with a piece of tape thrown by either Nate or Nick. And then Nate had sent that thing out on social media saying that Conor hit a little kid. You know, while it's interesting. Interesting, you know, you wrap it up in a news cycle that we could promote this event that it got out of control. There's also that safety component, is like other people are getting hit, you know, and I don't know. It was weird because, you know, they had cut to Connor and then they went to the wide shot and, you know, all of a sudden Nate was gone. And you wonder, you know, how did he, what led him to leave? And, you know, it was a surreal kind of thing to see them throwing these things. I mean, I kind of expected the middle fingers all over the place, but yeah, the throwing things, it was reminiscent of, the Diaz brothers at the World Series of Fighting event.
Yeah,
where you kind of saw that, where they were all over, I think it was it the Cosmopolitan out there. I am interested to see, first of all, what the NSAC does and what the UFC does. I mean, are they going to fine them or what? Because that you can't, I understand it's, you want to get some heat for this because there, like you indicated, there hasn't been a lot of spark or buzz to it, despite them trying to generate it. With that being said, you know, you have to do something here. I mean, it's similar to Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier a couple of years ago, where they are fighting and Cormier's throwing a shoe, lobbing a shoe out just indiscriminately. You know, I understand the heat of the moment, but they also have to respect that there's other people there.
Yeah, I don't see UFC or any NSSAC. Yeah, and Nevada State Athletic
Commission. The commission. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I don't know. I don't see them doing anything just because given their history of what they rule on and what they don't, and their decisions and weird kind of way they legislate things. I have a feeling that they're like, is this going to generate money for the state? Let's go for it and just say, you know, forget it. They're definitely not going to obviously put the fight in jeopardy. I'm wondering though, after this, did this? Let's rewind. Were you excited? Like, were you more excited for this fight going into today? Were you kind of still like, I was feeling just kind of a little like, I'll be excited when fight time gets here, but I'm really not feeling it. And if so, did this help you get more excited? The same? I mean, what were you thinking there?
Yeah. So it's funny because when they announced the fights that were going on, one of the other fights that they were going to put on this card was a Condit, Damian Maia,
yes,
which would have been a great, complement to Diaz McGregor. And, I was talking to a friend and was saying, you know, hey, that it would be great to go to 202 to see it instead of, 200, because 202 seems like it would have the heat. But as the time it got closer, it doesn't seem like in the past, the weeks coming up to this week, that there has been a lot of, spark generated by it. I'm sure Friday and Saturday, we got the weigh-ins coming up. MMA fans will be hyped for it. We'll be ready for it. But it just didn't seem like anything became of the lead up to it. Now, with respect to what happened today, I think that more of the casual fan will start to look towards Saturday and say, "Wow, this is." I got a lot of retweets about a couple of the things that were going on. Arash McCarvey of ESPN had posted the video, which everybody wanted to see. So I think that this did help, I think, the casual viewer to kind of, hey, there's a fight this Saturday. You should tune in.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we'll see kind of how it goes. I think you're right. And perhaps the mainstream fan, which is really, with all this stuff, that's really the difference makers, right? It's the mainstream sports fan that is the ones that make this difference in a pay-per-view being a 750,000 buy event to a million buy, right? It's that we saw that with Diaz McGregor one press conference, and you felt that heat immediately. And I don't know, we won't know till afterward whether or not this worked. I guess we'll see. Obviously we're recording this. It's late Wednesday night. So, Thursday, Friday, this thing could pick up more. I think we'll see in this next, 48 hours or so. Going to the fight itself, this is talking business-wise, this is a high-stakes fight. It's a high-stakes fight for both guys, with more so, I think, for McGregor, even though it's at welterweight and even though it's been said that he'll fight 145 pounds next. By the way, he is the featherweight champion of the world, which tends to get a little forgotten with everything. I think with two losses, I think part of the lack of buzz or that kind of that thing is that he is coming off his first UFC loss, and I do think that takes a little bit of the sting out of his comments and his demeanor and kind of how he goes about doing things. People love to see that the undefeated fighters, or at least undefeated in the UFC. And it's with another loss, and depending on how it happens, I think it definitely hurts his ability to command that presence, and it takes more of the shine off him. With Diaz, we'll stay with McGregor first. With a win, I think it's pretty hard to argue against that he'll be, he's right back where he was. Where do you think he's at with a loss?
It's going to be bad. that's obviously an understatement, but I think that the way he lost to Nate Diaz in the first fight wasn't very good. It wasn't like a five-round, barn burner where he lost by split decision. He was tapped out in the second round, and once he got hit a couple times, it was pretty much over. Everybody could tell, and he tapped out pretty quick. And if he loses again, and there's been a lot of, give it to him. He has confidence. McGregor has confidence. But, there's nothing I see from the first fight which can change the result of what's going to come up on Saturday. I still think Diaz wins. Maybe not as convincingly, but I still think that that Diaz is just better in that weight division than McGregor. And so that for the business side of that, if two straight losses from McGregor can hurt him, and he'd have to regenerate himself in the bantamweight division. You know, obviously Jose Aldo is waiting for him, and he can do that. The issue is whether or not that hurts the pay per view status. I mean, I think that he's so much. Business for the UFC in the past year, with the last July show and December show, and then in March, he's generated great gates. He's the trickle down economics of McGregor of the Irish fans that have gone the past three times. I'm not sure how many Irish fans are going to be there this August, but I mean for Saturday night. But there's been so much money generated into McGregor that if he sustains another loss, I'm not sure if he can draw as many as he has in the past year.
Yeah, looking at answer your question about tickets. There's been a story this week that I think as of the other day, which was, I think it was like Monday or Tuesday, I saw there was, you know, the ticket prices have kind of fluctuated. They've gone, mm-hmm. they've made these adjustments and so on. You know, there's still tickets available. I think I saw as many as like 2,000 or so at the beginning mm-hmm. of the week, which, you know, with a strong buzz can obviously, those can go like that. But it's surprising, and maybe it is, you know, a little bit of the Irish fans are not able to afford to come over, you know, something along those lines. That for whatever reason, a McGregor fight against Diaz, this big rematch, is still not sold out, and we're you know, a few days away. This is when you take a step back from it all, that's pretty amazing if you think about it. The past couple of years, this guy has been just a drawing phenom, just this amazing thing. The one difference is he's got that one loss against Diaz. So I'm thinking there may be a little bit of that hangover effect and maybe a little bit of concern, perhaps by some fans and McGregor fans, perhaps just the Irish or what have you, that they're maybe not so confident in their guy and they just don't want to see another loss.
Yeah, I definitely think that the concern of the loss, and again, I think it's how it happened. I mean, if this was a closer battle, there might be more of a fandom to come to it. But then again, just looking at it, from the economics of it, if we're assuming that a lot of his fans are in Europe and Ireland. To make that flight three times in a year to Vegas would be really hard. On you know, you got to fly, you have the hotel and all of that stuff. It would be really hard, and you know, this would be one of those times where you probably maybe just watch it and see go the next time. I that's kind of what I would think. Mm.
Looking at the seating map, and again, this is as of Wednesday night. There is you can still get some seats on the floor. Mm-hmm. The upper bowl is almost pretty well sold out, even though I think after production they've released some seats, and there are still plenty of seats left in that lower bowl. So this is it's going to be very interesting to see. Again, we're just a few days out. We have weigh-ins going on. Again, we have for Friday, and we'll see. Perhaps the bottle throwing incident will be heard around the world, mm-hmm. and people will be buying these seats. But it's. Very interesting stuff. Very interesting stuff. So with Nate Diaz, right? So I was thinking about this, yeah. You know, all week is that, you know, his star is obviously has been on the rise. He's always been a kind of a cult favorite, but now obviously the McGregor victory and the post fight promo, he's really got that shine behind him, just that buzz behind him. But he's one of these guys that could easily just disappear. For a year, you know, like he did before, and he wouldn't be able to really capitalize on a lot of this. You know, he and his brother have talked about their disregard for titles and all this. So, you know, if he wins, I'm you know, they've obviously had this star there, but you know, it kind of sucks that he could be just gone for another year and may not choose to fight unless it's a quote unquote big fight. So it's I'm very intrigued if Diaz wins. What do they do with him? Do they automatically vault him into that title picture at 170? Does he want to go back to 155? And what can they do with him? And can they keep him interested enough to have him fight two times a year as opposed to one time a year at best?
Yeah, you know, I do think that he reiterated today at the press conference he wants the big money fights. He doesn't want to have to work his way through. And I understand. I mean, if you recall, a little ways back, he had taken a huge pay cut where he was making $50,000 per fight, and then it got knocked down to like something ridiculous to like $12,000 to $15,000. So, he's at a point now where he's probably making a really good chunk of change, and he wants the big money fights. He's beaten McGregor. He has a resume now where he can pick and choose. He's at the top of the card. You know, I think with a win, he could definitely demand demand Eddie Alvarez or whoever's at the 155, yep. Whoever's the 155 champ at the time. I don't know if he really wants to go at 170, because if Nick comes back, that's probably where he'll be placed. I don't know if we were just to say, hey, if Nate stays at 170, you know, how would he do against Tyrone Woodley? I'm not really sure how heavy hitters such as Tyrone Woodley and Nate Diaz. I don't know if Lawler would have, is a good matchup either. So sure. I mean, I think 155 would probably be where he'd be, but he would be at the top of the line to challenge whoever is at who has the title.
Going to the co-main event, one of the more overlooked top light heavyweight fights in some time. And I think it's just because there's really no vitriol between these guys, or they're kind of coming into this fight promoting it like two pros, which, you know, that's what some guys are prone to do. I don't know if that's the best way to generate that that almighty dollar, but, you know, they're still doing it. Anthony Johnson, Glover Teixeira, two very heavy hitters, guys that happened to be at the press conference today, and they were completely overlooked. I like how Dana, after the whole Conor thing, was just kind of like, oh, we're done. And you kind of see those guys being like, oh, we are? Like, it's almost like...
Yeah, like they didn't know where to go. They were just like, they were about to walk off together. So it's like, which way do we go?
Exactly. Yeah, and it would have been... It would have been great if all of a sudden they just started getting into it to add another level of craziness to it. But... you know, again, these guys going for a shot at, conceivably, I guess it's going to be Daniel Cormier, because who knows about the whole John Jones thing and all that. So we'll say Daniel Cormier is going to be the guy that's going to be fighting against one of these two guys defending his light heavyweight title. And the story of Anthony Johnson, a guy that is looked great at 205 pounds, just beating guys up. His one, you know, blemish on that mark since coming back has been Daniel Cormier. Glover Teixeira looking to get back to a light heavyweight title shot after, you know, getting pretty thoroughly dominated by John Jones several years ago. Interesting fight here, light heavyweight. Two guys that are in the right spot, the right time, and have a chance to potentially put each other out at any time.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting things that I noticed at the press conference was both of them seemed really annoyed when anybody brought up John Jones. When anyone brought up John Jones, I mean, I know that each one of them wants Daniel Cormier, but like, yeah, the whole John Jones, I think Anthony Johnson had that look in his eyes, like, enough with this guy, I'm done with John Jones. I need to focus on Glover Teixeira. And so, yeah, it's going to be an interesting fight. You know, I hope it doesn't become one of these hold fests that tends to happen when you're awaiting a big slugfest. And I hope that doesn't happen, but it'll be an interesting fight. And, you know, I don't know if we're making picks here, but I would like to see Anthony Johnson get a shot at the title, the light heavyweight title. That'd be great. I mean, I just don't know if matchup wise how Glover Teixeira would do, but that's just me.
Yeah, I wonder. I'm unless something drastic happens here over the next 24 hours, I'm going to go with Johnson as well. You know, he's coming off, three straight wins and, that's actually Glover Teixeira rather, but, you know, Johnson's put together this really nice run. On the flip side, Teixeira put together some wins, but the competition, you know, has been kind of like, you know, I guess it's tough because light heavyweight, the overall competition there, it's hard to get back to that Tiffany division that it used to be, as they used to call it, with the Chuck Liddells, the Couture, the Titos, right. All these guys that were just there. it felt so stacked and felt just there was guys no matter what at any time that could challenge and put together a fun fight. Vanderlei Silva came over, all this stuff, right? And now we're talking about you basically, you know, the soon to be perhaps over career of Rashad Evans, you know, guys like Patrick Cummins, who was, you know, competing, not even competing. He was, you know, serving
barista.
Coffee. Yeah, yeah. A barista a couple of years ago, Ovin St. Preux, who, I think that, you know, he's a decent fighter, but I think the prospect status has kind of been erased off him at this point. You know, Phil Davis, obviously gone to Bellator. There's all these guys, John Jones, who knows where he's at. The division's kind of weird, and the, again, these guys are in a position where they've done the best of what they can. With Johnson, you know, I with Teixeira, I worry about his age if he gets a title shot. Obviously, he can still hit, but I mean, he's knocked out Cummins and Evans, which, you know, at this stage of the game, yeah, it's not super impressive. But you look at you know, Johnson, obviously, what really stands out, and to me, the signature win for him is when he went into Sweden. And he just dominated Alexander Gustafsson. In front of 30,000 people, 30,000 of Gustafsson's own countrymen, this big thing in Fox, he took advantage of the situation, said there's no pressure on me, and he just dusted him. And Gustafsson has just been, you know, trying to find his way ever since. I'm going with Johnson in this. Just I think he's surging at the right time. I don't know if he's going to be able to solve Cormier based on what we saw for the as a win for that that light heavyweight title some time ago, but you know, I you're right. I hope this is not a 15-minute cage grapple fest. You know, an attempt to stay away from the power of each other. I think Johnson is going to go for it. I hope, and yeah, that's kind of how I see this fight going.
Yeah, me too.
Let's see. So what else on the show? I mean, it is not a star laden show. I think we're in this stretch now with so many different events. It's almost like what felt like a year ago or so when there was all these different events and this talent was stretched thin. You mentioned, you know, Carlos Condit was supposed to be on the show against Damian Maia. That got shifted by a week or so. This show is really built around Connor and Nate. Obviously, the co-main event we talked about should be entertaining. But, you know, Donald Cerrone continuing his run at welterweight, third from the top. Other than that, you know, Tim Means returning, but not exactly Mr. Pay-Per-View, you know, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I
know. You know, being on the main card. And I think the stacking of this, there's some interesting fights on the show. You know, Cody Garbrandt, which really, they seem to be really positioning Cody Garbrandt as like the next big thing here at bantamweight. I just see a lot of interviews with him, a lot of specific things that he's saying. You know, the Dominic Cruz thing has not left his mouth. You know, he keeps bringing that up with, you know, building that up for potential of the future, finding a tough guy in Takeda Mizugaki. Neil Magny against Lorenz Larkin, which really should be on.
Yeah, you know, that's the fight.
A little bit higher up the card, but this whole thing about the slotting for Fight Pass to FS1 to pay-per-view and how they're doing that now. So there's interesting fights, and you perked up there for Magny Larkin. Is that the fight on the amongst the undercard that you're most interested in seeing?
Yeah, you know, the two featured fights on both prelims. So basically, Cody Garbrandt and Takeya Mizugaki. Talking about that first, that'll be an interesting fight just because it will continue the Dom Cruz versus Alpha Male rivalries. Because obviously, we recall Dom Cruz, Dominic. I call him Dom. I don't know why, but
he's your boy. He's your boy.
Yeah, we share the last name. I guess we. So anyway, if you recall his return fight, he knocked out Mizugaki in, you know, less than a minute. So we'll see how Cody does, and I'm sure he knows what Dominic Cruz did to Mizugaki. So that'll be an interesting fight. Neil Magny is the guy, the up and coming guy that you don't hear about. If you were to ever tell your friends, you know, about a guy that's on the up and coming, but no one talks about.
Yeah.
It would be Neil Magny, because I thought the Hector Lombard fight should have been the thing that put him on the map. I guess this is a reward for him to be the featured fight on Fight Pass. But he, the Lorenzo Larkin, he's an exciting fighter. That should be a good matchup. I expect Magny with the win to, you know, at least be put on the next pay-per-view card, whatever it may, whatever his next fight would be, it would be on pay-per-view. I think Magny is a great asset for the company, and he just signed the eight-fight deal, so this is the first fight on his eight-fight deal.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. You mentioned that Lombard fight. I completely forgot about that, and then, you know, that's kind of the byproduct of so many different shows, but now Everything comes back to me. Obviously, that big fight in March, it was on the Hunt versus Mir fight night card. That was his third win in a row. Again, the only loss over the last, God, since what, February 2014. This is a guy that fights, like, it seems like all the time. Like, he is constantly in there and beating tough guys. And his only loss over that stretch was against Damian Maia. He beat Kelvin Gastelum, split decision in late November. And again, the Lombard fight really was that was such a fun fight. And one that, you're right, yeah, it's surprising that people still sleep on Magny. I don't know if it's just the personality, the fact that he hasn't, you know, not in a bad way, just... He's not the McGregor type, right? He's not the big talker. But if you look at welterweight, he's beating guys. He's beating guys routinely. He always fights. He submit guys. He finishes guys. Has good gas tank. And he's I believe he's a veteran. If I remember that right, he seems to be the type of guy that if he wins this fight, that puts him in interesting fight territory next. I mean, it's hard. There's only so many guys you can beat in this middle of the pack before it's time to take another jump up. Perhaps a Damian Maia isn't a type, but perhaps a Robbie Lawler type or someone like that, where you're trying to figure out, okay, who's going to be this next group of contenders after this whole mess with it gets figured out if it's going to be Wonderboy Thompson, GSP coming back, whoever's going to be first for Tyron Woodley. He seems to be the guy that's kind of like floating around maybe that, you know, 5-6 position in that division, that if he wins this one, that puts him in a fight being like, he can actually say, look, I should be getting a big fight next, and I want something. I want something big, especially if he finishes Lorenzo Larkin, who, by the way, is obviously a very exciting fighter as well. Still kind of trying to figure out his way and get these long win streaks and get his name in there. I think still he's. I saw a headline today. He's complaining a little bit about the promotion and kind of like how he's being pushed and all this. And it's he's had an interesting UFC run since being brought over from Strikeforce. I mean, back then, obviously Strikeforce, the competition level is different, and I just remember him being seemingly a bigger part of that promotion. But it's tough when you have so many guys in the UFC. You got to do some stuff between the fights to make sure you stay relevant, stay out there. And maybe this is the beginning of that for Larkin. I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah, most definitely. I think it would be a great feather in his cap if Larkin were to. I believe Magny's the favorite, but if he would upset Neil Magny, this would propel him a little bit more. He had a tough. He did beat George Masvidal, but he had that tough fight against Albert Tumanov, I recall, at UFC 195 earlier this year, which I thought was a really good fight, if memory serves me. But like you said, there's a lot of fights going on.
And I mentioned earlier this, the Condit Maia fight is actually headlining a Fox show the week after. Anthony Pettis is fighting on that show. Paige VanZant is fighting on that show. Fan favorite Joe Lozon's fighting on the show. There's some interesting guys and girls fighting on that show, which comes just a week after. So I don't know. It's this glut of events is happening, and it is it's not slowing down anytime soon. Fortunately, it tends to weaken some of these cards because there's only so many stars and recognizable names. But, you know, I guess we'll watch no matter what. So I guess that's really what the UFC wants, right?
Yeah, I think I read somewhere there's, from here on out, there's a fight until the end of the fight each week until the end of the year.
Wow.
For UFC. Yeah.
That's incredible stuff. Before we get to WWE to kind of round out our conversation, because I know you want to talk a little bit about that.
Sure.
And being WrestlingObserver.com, I think it's probably pretty fair to talk about that. I did want to ask you earlier, you mentioned the lawsuit, the multitude of lawsuits against Zuffa, the UFC, whatever you want to call it, with, this, the Kung Lee stuff and all this. And now you have these union groups, right? And now Jeff Boris was on Ariel Helwani's MMA Hour on Monday, And there's these groups that are just starting to appear that are trying to get behind it, not necessarily unified with some of the other measures. But I want to kind of get your take on that with the business side of things and what your perception is of what's kind of going on with the lawsuits and also these other groups. And what do you make of all this? Do you think is it just all noise, or do you think eventually everything is kind of going to gel together to work itself out? What do you think?
Well, just to give a status on the lawsuit, it's right now in the discovery phase, and it's going to be a long, prolonged situation because there's tons of documents that both sides are exchanging between the former UFC fighters and the UFC, and then they're attempting to get other documents from other third parties, which is going to be a bear as well. And just from the perspective of someone who's actually done, as a young associate, a document discovery and looking through all these documents, well, while one person might say, oh, all these contracts are cool and stuff, it's a glut of stuff. I mean, you know, when people ask for stuff, they will give you the whole shebang. I mean, just everything. So they're in a discovery phase right now. There's no depositions that have gone forth so far in the antitrust lawsuit. So we're kind of in a nothing to really report kind of phase. As far as Professional Fighters Association, I did listen to Jeff Boer's talk with Ariel Helwani, and he's actually holding a press conference tomorrow afternoon in Vegas, which will be interesting too. So he belongs to a sports agency that represents the Diaz brothers, and of course, if you go on their website, Lucas Middlebrooks was the attorney, is one of the members of PFA, and he's the attorney that, as you recall, represented Nick Diaz against the Nevada Athletic Commission. And if you recall the whole thing where it got all blown out of proportion and they gave him the huge, huge suspension, and that was later repealed. But there's a lot of tension there between PFA and MMAFA with respect to what they're going to do. It's the business of organizing fighters. MMAFA has been here for a long time, and their stance is they're for the fighters. Everything is going to be done by the fighters. They're setting up an association for fighters, UFC, non-UFC. Boris is setting up a union for specifically UFC fighters. He had a very compelling argument with Ariel Helwani. I don't believe he talked about any conflicts, but obviously what has been pointed out by MMAFA is the fact that there is a conflict or a potential conflict, the fact that agents are setting up the union. Now, PFA does have, a little bit of momentum here, because on the website you could see, and through Boris's connections, he's kind of gotten, I don't know if you would say endorsements, maybe tacit endorsements from the NFLPA, from the NBA Players Association, from MLB. So basically people saying, these fighters should organize. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if I think if you go back and look at the statements, I think that it's a pretty generic statement saying, this is wrong. They should organize. How it should be done is not really endorsed there. I don't believe. So I'm not quite sure how PFA is going to do it. I mean, from what Boris is saying, it sounds like it's for the betterment of the fighters, which is great. MMAFA also is doing the same thing for more than just UFC fighters. Now, to boil it all, and then there was a report from MMA Junkie that there's also a law firm out there soliciting New York law firms soliciting fighters as well to either unionize or associate or organize in certain ways. Yeah. So here we have the business of organizing fighters. I think the overarching goal is that, whatever is done, whether it be union, but from PFA or MMAFA, that the health, safety, well-being, rights of the fighters are protected. I think that's the overarching goal. How it happens is going to be what we're going to what the interesting thing. You know, will there be a fight? You know, will there be a struggle, an internal struggle? Because you know, you see MMAFA releasing a statement and just indicating that, you know, reiterating their goals, hopes and goals for the organization. PFA will probably do the same tomorrow at their press conference. I, to be honest with you, I don't know which is better, you know, or which is, if there's a better side or if there's a more advantageous side for the fighters. You know, if you are on the side of watching, you know, watching, being a fan, you know, obviously you want to see after their fighting time is done that they're taken care of in some way, that fighters are taken care of in some way. You'd like to see them taken care of as they are fighting, you know, meaning, right, you know, insurance,
video game rights,
video licensing, game rights, yeah, payments, licensing, things of that nature, things that they're not getting done so far. So I think that's kind of what we'll see in the coming weeks and months. I don't know what will happen first, the resolution or trial in the Kung Lee versus Azufa case, or well, actually, maybe now it's UFC case, or whether we'll see some sort of organization through some one of these entities, or maybe an entity that hasn't even spoken up. I can tell you that that there are, aside from these three organizations, there's been other types of groups that have tried to, you know, formulate some sort of union or an association. And so when I hear these things, I kind of wonder, you know, just from that attorney perspective, business person perspective, like how are they monetizing this? You know, are there fees going to be paid? What is, you know, what is their end goal? And I know we all want to be altruistic and say that, oh, we're just doing it for the common good, but there's a reason to the rhyme, I guess you could say. And so we shall see how it all pans out.
So let's round the bend with hashtag WWE. You have mentioned that. I've seen some different tweets from you about WWE. You seem to be very interested in the game. And what's your current fandom? What do you watch? Where did it start? And take us through that.
So you know, I am. You know, actually, you probably know. You know Matt Farmer, correct?
Yes.
Yes, so he actually, we became friends on online as well. He lives up here too, so he's much more a fan than I am, I guess. But I grew up watching Portland area with wrestling. If you are a fan, you know Playboy Buddy Rose, Rip the Crippler, Oliver, you know, the Assassin, Roddy Piper started up here, that kind of thing. So I was a big fan when I was a little kid, and so like it's funny because I do have a 3- and 5-year-old, and I'm trying to think to myself, at what age can I allow them to watch these things? You know, I don't know UFC, maybe not right now, but can they watch John Cena? Can, you know, I have these discussions with my wife about what can be done. But anyway, you know, I was a big into it, like Monday nights. I used to, so in law school, Monday nights were sacred because like I would go to class and I would watch Nitro and then Raw. That would be my thing. That would be the way that I would escape. So I've been a big fan since then. Currently, like I do watch WWE. I, you know, when the network came on, I immediately went back to a lot of the TBS Superstation stuff because I didn't have cable back in the day. So I would watch all that stuff. I do watch current Raw and SmackDown. Fast forward a lot. I do fast forward a lot.
The DVR is our friend these days.
DVR is our friend. I do like. I'll tell you what. The network. I am into the Cruiserweight Classic. It's the greatest thing. NXT. I watch as well. Shout out to Lucha Underground. That's great. And whenever I do watch, whenever I can get my hands on PWG, I can do as well.
Very good. Very good. Also, real quick, did you see part one of the CM Punk documentary?
I did not. I missed it. And I did see the trailer. I did see the trailer, but I did not see. I saw bits and pieces of what he's talking about. I saw the original WWE bio on him. And, gotcha. You know, I thought it was good, but I didn't see the.
Yeah, so I'd watch it. You know, it's half an hour, and for those that have seen it, it's this whole thing about whether he should be in the UFC or not. I'm way past that. I think people get it, right? He's just he's not stealing a spot because it's not like a Major League Baseball roster or NFL roster where there's X amount of guys and that's it, right? It's just MMA. It's just UFC. It's this fluctuating. You know, less guys than more guys, less whatever they need, right? So it's a, you know, publicity stunt. He had a name. I think once this thing is all said and done, depending on how long he wants to fight and all this, I think we can actually look back and realize that they announced it way too soon. He should have been, you know, in training already and have an embargo as far as like mentioning it or him just wanting to train but not saying he was going to go to UFC, knowing all the while that he may have had a, you know, back pocket deal with UFC, right? I think probably people can agree that how the whole thing was rolled out, that it was going to happen a lot quicker. He got injured and it just kept dragging it out and dragging it out, dragging out. So this 4-part documentary, the first part aired, I'm glad that they're doing something with it, because if they didn't, you know, this whole thing could be just a waste and be over in a couple of minutes time, coming up in less than a month or so. But I thought it was, you know, it's documentary filmmaking 101. It's a guy that is, you give a little bit of background. He is going into a new industry, a new sport, a new challenge. And you see his struggles from day one. If all of a sudden he was going in there kicking ass on day one, it certainly wouldn't make, you know, a 2 hours worth of documentary footage on this for FS1. In the first part, again, he goes in there, he does what, you know, his first training fight, a smoker, whatever you want to call it, which he did 2 months after he first started training. He goes through it, and, you know, spoiler alert, he gets beat up pretty good. The guy he's in there with is a guy that, you know, is 6-2 and is a pro, so. You can imagine anyone that's a professional going, you know, any weight class, anything like that, that's going to happen, you know. And granted, the magic of editing, we don't really know how badly he got beaten, but you can imagine, just because that's just the way that it is. But I thought the backstory was good. You see a little bit of him with his wife April and her trepidation about things. It's, you know, it's half an hour, 23 minutes, and using the DVR remote, and it's. It's entertaining, and I think that's really all they can imagine for. I hope for. I don't know if I think he's going to get smashed against Mickey Gall, just because I think Mickey Gall is more experienced. And I think no matter what Punk says, that he is, you know, he's not going to get intimidated and all this stuff, because he's been on these big stages before and performed. It is completely different when you get into a physical, a athletic sport, a physical thing like UFC. I mean, You can say that you've done all this stuff before, but he hasn't, and especially on this stage, you know, it's just, he's a human being at the end of the day, and I just think the experience level with Gall and everything, I think it's going to get to him. Whether or not he keeps it up, that whatever he wants to do, that's fine. I think they're just trying to get the most out of it, and this documentary, I thought it was good. You have some people that completely, basically shitting all over it, shitting all over him, and then you have this other side, they're like, yeah, you know what the hell, we'll go in there and try. It is going to take up on that night. It's going to take up, you know, with entrances and all that stuff, probably what, 10 minutes max, you know, depending on what happens. And we'll just kind of go on their lives and figure it out from there. I'm not as bothered by this as some people are, but, you know, that's just me, I guess.
You know, it's interesting. I go back and forth on this just because, you know, just watching the trailer, they really make a guy like Punk look, you know, like the sympathetic figure. I mean, here's a guy who's a multimillionaire guy, and you feel, you know, and you think they make portray him as like this poor, you know, guy who just coming up. I do think that a lot of people just for one reason or another want to see him fail. But, you know, I think that and these document, I'm a sucker for these documentaries, so I kind of kick myself that I hadn't watched it yet. But the one thing about it, you're compelled by the story and see how he you know, how he's training and he's given up, you know, the WWE for this. And, you know, he's an older guy. You know, I think that this would have worked better if he had not gotten injured. I think that was the one thing that if the timeline would have been better, if they made that announcement and he's like, he's good. I think it was, I forget when they made the announcements, but it should have been made the announcement 3 months later. He's in the octagon and then be done with it, because you've got to hit that thing running. I don't know if it was a conflict with WWE or whatnot, but then again, he did have an injury, and it's kind of prolonged this whole thing where it's now almost 2 years, one and a half years.
So it was December 2014 when they announced it. And you're right. And that's kind of what I was what I was alluding to earlier, is that if they had announced it and he's been like, yeah, I've been training for, you know, the last year or 8 months, granted, you know, any of us could train for 8 months and not be ready for UFC, probably even be ready for, like, you know, Bellator opening fight, or, you know, a World Series of Fighting, or even our local. I mean, these guys, you know, are athletes, and they get to this is the other thing with this, is that we try to, you know, the UFC, we want it up on this pedestal, right? And when things like this come in, it's like, you know, you kind of question that. But then again, there is, you know, so you've seen as much fights as myself and as anyone, that there's a lot of guys that fight on these shows that are not UFC caliber. They're just not. They're
right.
Last-second replacements. They're filling spots. I mean, if you look at this glut of shows we've been talking about, I mean, there's 12 fights per card. We can argue about whether it needs to be at this point, 2016. Granted, they're trying to fill all these content channels, you know, with Fight Pass and all stuff. They're just trying to fill space. And because of that, there's guys in there that we know are not ready for prime time, but they're getting these opportunities. I mean, even if it had been 6 months down the road, I think that would have helped. But yeah, I mean, yeah, December 2014, and now we're in August 2016, and we're finally going to see this come to fruition. And anyone's guess, I would say anyone's guess how it's going to go. I think when the odds come out, I think we'll probably or get a little bit closer. I think we'll see what people really think. But, you know, as we've seen in this last year, stranger things have happened, you know.
Yeah, you know,
he could just land right in a combo and sink in a rear naked choke and completely stun Gall, who could be completely overwhelmed as well. We have to see how he handles this media spotlight. So, you know, anything can happen. I just don't expect it. But yeah, I would definitely go check it out. Well worth seeing.
Awesome. I will.
So with all that, we'll hand the floor over to you. Where can people catch up to you on social media? Where can they read you, interact with you, get autographs, all that good stuff? The floor is yours.
Oh, awesome. So I write for MMAPayout.com. Twitter handle is at MMAPayout. You could, my personal Twitter account is at Dilettante, DILLETAUNT. Yes, I know it's kind of weird, but that's what I came up with in 2008 when I established it, and I'm not changing it anymore. Or no, I'm not changing it at all. So there you go. It's Dilettante, at Dilettante. So there you go. You could just also, I guess you could just write out my name too if you really want to, but there you go.
Very good. And obviously you can follow me on Twitter as well, and I will, you know, share that out with the world. So not too hard to find Jason Cruz on Twitter, social media, and all that good stuff. So with all that said, thank you very much for joining Josh Nason's Punch this week. It's been a lot of fun, Jason.
Thank you very much, Josh. Appreciate it.
All right, big thanks to Jason Cruz. You can obviously follow his work at MMAPayout.com. You can follow him at Dilettante. I will link his Twitter profile, obviously, when I'm sharing out this post, this podcast. So you can follow along. Don't drive and tweet. Don't drive and follow. Don't do it. Don't do it. If you're thinking about reaching for that phone, just wait. Wait till you get where you're going to go. Hopefully you enjoy that conversation. We'll have him on again, talk a little bit more about business. Big, a lot of money at stake here coming up on Saturday for both guys, especially McGregor. I fear, as a fan of fun stuff going on in the sport and big personalities and all that stuff, I fear what will happen with McGregor loss. I really do. I just hope for a good fight regardless. I think we could all use it. We need a little kick in the ass. I think we're still a little hungover from UFC 200. So hopefully this will be a nice start to the second half of the year. And, you know, it's there's a lot of events, and let's have some stuff that really matters here, you know? And we got CM Punk fighting, we got heavyweight title fights coming up, and a lot of questions to be answered. GSP, is he coming back or not? What's happening with Brock? All this different stuff. What's happening with Jon Jones? A lot of questions. Let's get some answers, and let's get some answers about what kind of what guy we have in Conor McGregor and what we're going to see at with a full training camp, no excuses, and whether or not, with a loss, if that rose completely wilts or not. Let's see. Before we go, obviously want to acknowledge and give a shout-out to the family of best wishes to the family of Chael Sonnen, losing their daughter, unfortunately, a tiny newborn, born 10 weeks early due to contracting listeria. It is a terrible, terrible situation, one that hits close to home because my wife and I are expecting our first in October, and there is fear about everything, Zika virus, all this stuff, and then you hear stuff like this, and it's like, my God, it's just the worst, absolute worst, and there's nothing that we can say to make it better. Obviously, if there's a charity or anything like that that comes out of this, you know, something to donate to, we'll make you aware of that in case you happen to want to donate money. But it is, you can read the story at MMAfighting.com about kind of what happened, and it's a very tragic story, very sad story, and hopefully they're doing well. And it's going to take a while to recover from this, obviously, but you know, hopefully people can separate out the character Chael Sonnen from the man, and the man is definitely hurting tonight, and our hearts are full of sadness for that. He's been a friend of the site for a long time, and you know, best wishes to them. So that's all to say about that. And with all that, we'll get out of here on that. Looking forward to UFC 202. Looking forward to seeing what happens, getting some questions answered, and let's see what Connor's got. Right, let's see what he's got, and chance to back it up on Saturday night. And regardless, we'll have some stuff to talk about next week. And I believe I was actually going to tell you the guest for next week, but I want to confirm it first. But it sounds like we should have a very interesting guest for both pro wrestling fans and MMA fans alike. So we'll leave with that one. With that, big thanks to Jason Cruz of MMA Payout. Thanks to all of you. This has been Josh Nason's Punch Out. I am Josh Nason. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.